This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The day has arrived, the day of the total eclipse of the sun as it traverses the continental United States from Oregon to Charleston, South Carolina. The last time this happened, at least in this country, was on February 26, 1979, and as it will be today, it was the story of the day on the evening news. Here's Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. For parts of North America, the sun went out today. For a little under 3 minutes, the forces of darkness ruled in daylight as a great swath of shadow up to 190 miles wide cut across the continent from the coast of Oregon to Greenland. It was the last total eclipse of the sun for North America until the year 2017.
From 40,000 feet above the cloud cover, scientists studying the eclipse had an unparalleled view.
More is being learned about the corona all the time. Many experts believe it has a direct effect on the Earth's weather.
As the totality of the eclipse approached, the druids at Stonehenge seemed almost spellbound. And finally, at the moment the moon passes between the sun and this spot on Earth, total darkness. Fireworks, a Roman candle, Venus and the stars, the distant suns, the only light from the universe.
A very spiritual experience, it is to me anyway.
It was really a very incredible experience.
Far out. You can expect similar reactions to today's event, which will begin in the Charlotte area at 1:12 this afternoon with maximum coverage of the sun by the moon at 2:41 p.m. in Charlotte. That coverage will be, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 97.9%. But if you head into South Carolina, you can experience total eclipse in places like Winnsboro, Columbia, and Charleston. Much of this experience will be at the mercy of the weather, specifically cloud cover, and in a moment we'll hear from a meteorologist about what to expect in the prime viewing areas, as well as here in Charlotte. But we want to first go to WFAE's Alex Olgan. She is among the many migrants that have been flooding into South Carolina. Carolina this weekend. She is in Winnsboro and she joins us now. Alex, welcome.
Thanks. Hi, Mike.
Hi. We have several hours before this eclipse begins. What's it like in Winnsboro right now?
So I'm at a baseball field where Davidson is holding an event and people are just starting to arrive, get out of their cars. They have lawn chairs. Some people have cameras and they're setting up little picnics in the field. There's a police presence as well. And it's a pretty sunny day in Winnsboro, very little cloud cover, it's high 80s, pretty humid. So I think people are just still hoping that the weather stays clear through this afternoon.
And as I understand it, you took a chance and just arrived. We were hearing all these predictions of monstrous traffic getting into South Carolina, but you just arrived. How many people are in that ballpark and how many people did you see on your route who are obviously setting up to watch this eclipse?
Right, so traffic wasn't that bad, but I left early this morning, so it was pretty smooth. There were a lot of cars, but I didn't feel like I was going below the speed limit, so that wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I would say at the ballpark right now set up, there's probably about 15 people, but people are parking and walking in as I'm talking to you. Go ahead.
Was there a lot of traffic on 77?
It wasn't too bad. Highway 26 to Highway 77, and nothing too bad. People were moving, but there were a good number of cars.
So if you haven't purchased the special glasses that you're supposed to have with the ISO ranking to give you a safe view of this eclipse, are they available? Are there vendors set up around you to sell things like that, to sell things like water and food? Are there medical people around? Have you seen any of this yet?
Yeah, so there are medical people around. There are policemen. There's fire trucks. Now, this event, Davidson University, they're giving a certain number of glasses away to the first several hundred people. And then after that, they're going to run out of glasses. Fortunately, I got mine ahead of time, and I can't tell whether or not people that are here so far either have their own glasses or are going to get them. I think that the university is still getting everything set up and will dole out the glasses later.
You know, we saw stories on TV last week on the network newscasts of people flooding into places like Oregon where this eclipse will begin. And on Thursday and Friday, they were showing these bumper-to-bumper-to-bumper-to-bumper backups of campers and Winnebagos and single-family cars driving in. We have not witnessed that here in South Carolina. Why not? We have better roads?
I don't know about that. Some people would beg to differ. I'm not really sure why that is. I wonder if it's just because it was on a Monday and people were traveling over the weekend, it was more spread out. But I do know that the city of Columbia and the city of Charleston said their hotels were totally booked up. So, you know, it's not like people aren't there. It's just at least the major highways that I've been traveling on haven't been bumper to bumper. So I can't tell you exactly why, but there at least my route wasn't horrible traffic.
We'll find out what it's like in Columbia in a moment because Brad Panovich, who's the meteorologist we're going to be talking to, is there, and we'll see what the situation there is like. Are you seeing a lot of campers? Did you see a lot of campers and things set up along the way, or are people just basically coming out in cars and planning to watch it and go?
I did see some campers. I saw some old Winnebagos and that kind of thing. I can't guarantee that they were going to the eclipse, but they looked like it. I see some tents. People are setting up tents in the field, and it looks like people are in here for several hours. I can't tell, though, if people are going to camp out here and stay overnight. I'm not seeing too many, like, RVs that are at this park.
When will the total eclipse in Winnsboro be? Do you know the exact time?
Yeah, it's estimated to be 2 minutes and 40 seconds, around 2:45.
Really? 2:45? So you'll be a little later than us? That's interesting. The big fear is what's going to happen after this eclipse, because it's 2.5 minutes, give or take a second or two. And the fear among a lot of public safety officials is that although people have come into South Carolina, particularly places like Columbia and Charleston and maybe Greenville, Spartanburg, they've come in over the weekend or beginning on Friday and set up shop and, you know, checked into the hotel, etc. But when it's over at 2:45, they're going to just go, bang. And that's going to create immediate and impenetrable gridlock. Have you heard those stories?
I am concerned about that because I will be one of those people that's on the road. I have heard the same concerns from people. I haven't talked to officers here yet, but I expect that that will be a big concern and that getting back on the highway is going to be difficult. I think that the only thing, maybe some people will hold out and wait and stay a little bit later, or maybe stay overnight. You know, Winnsboro is a pretty small town, so I don't know the hotel status here. But I'm hoping that it won't be as bad as people are predicting.
But have they set up special viewing? I know you're in a ballpark in Winnsboro, but have they set up other special viewing areas for the people who have come in specifically from out of town to see this thing?
In Winnsboro, I just arrived. I drove around a little bit. I haven't seen other areas that are set up like this is. Again, this is a university run event. But I have not seen other events that are set up this formally. At least, you know, since I've been here so far.
So right now, you said this at the very beginning of our conversation, the skies are clear and blue and sunny over Winnsboro. Do you know what the forecast is for later on this afternoon when this whole thing begins?
You know, it was estimated to be a little overcast. This was a couple days ago, but it's sunny so far. I don't think we're expecting any rain. There's only a couple clouds, just a few I could count. So I think so far, people are hoping that this is the weather that stays.
Okay. We'll check back in with you a little later on in the program down in Winnsboro. WFAE's Alex Olgan, a prime viewing area, by the way, for the total eclipse. If I got in my car right now and just said, I don't want to do the rest of the show and drove to Winnsboro, could I get there in time?
That's a great question. I am not sure. You can give it a try and let me know.
All right. We'll check back in with you. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate it.
Sounds good.
Of course, Columbia is billing itself as the total eclipse capital of the East Coast, and that is where WCNC-TV chief meteorologist Brad Panovich is stationed for this event. Specifically, he is at Lake Murray, which is that city is to that city what Lake Norman is to ours, and he'll be doing live shots all day from that area on TV, but he joins us for a few minutes now on Skype, because the success of this event all rests on the weather gods, of which he is one. Welcome back, Brad. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
You're welcome. There was great concern, and with justification earlier this week, or last week, I guess, that the weather in South Carolina specifically, in places like Charleston and Columbia, might not cooperate. What do the skies look like right now where you are?
I've got mostly sunny skies here on Lake Murray. It is really hot and humid, though. I'll tell you that.
That's Columbia.
Super muggy. Yeah, I know. And that's why I'm actually looking forward to this eclipse a little bit, because in the heat of the day here in Columbia, to see the sun go away for almost 2 minutes and 40 seconds is going to have a rather dramatic effect on the temperature. So right now, it looks like we're just going to have a few fair weather clouds. I don't think we'll be overcast or anything like that, but I certainly think there'll be some clouds out there. I think the bigger issue is going to be down in Charleston. They've got a little stalled front off the coast, and there could be some showers and storms and some more thicker cloud cover down that way. But I think in the upstate and the Midlands of South Carolina, we're going to be okay. Certainly we'll have some clouds, but clouds aren't always a bad thing. A couple here and there are okay as long as we get some breaks to see it. The big question is, what's it going to be like for that 2 minutes and 34 seconds here? If we get one puffy cloud that happens to be over the sun in that 2 minutes, I'm going to be very upset.
And that's what you mean by fair weather clouds, just these puffy clouds that float by.
Just those puffy cumulus. Not a big deal. But that's part of the reason I'm at the lake, too. The cool thing about big bodies of water like this in the summer, they tend to have a little clearing around them because the water is slightly cooler than the land. Ah. And when the land heats up, that creates those puffy clouds. But over the water, you typically get a little clearing spot. So I'm optimistic that little lake effect clearing will help us out here at Lake Murray.
Okay. What is your forecast for the Charlotte area? I know we're not going to have total eclipse, but will we be able to see it here?
I think we'll be fine in the Charlotte area. We should have partly cloudy to partly sunny skies. Again, I think we will see some passing clouds, but a lot like yesterday. We had some of those clouds moving across the sky, and those will be around most of the afternoon, but there'll be enough breaks that you'll be able to see the partial. And then towards maximum eclipse, I think we'll be fine as well. There should be a pretty significant drop in temperature in Charlotte as well. Probably not as much down here, but maybe 4, 5, 6 degrees possible, because that's the max heating of the day. And when you remove the sun, even at 98%, you're going to drop the temperature quite a bit.
Huh. For those who can't make it to South Carolina for the total eclipse, you published a list of key viewing areas for, I think it's 97.9%. I've seen different figures, but I think you're saying 97.9% eclipse here.
Yeah.
Where are you suggesting people go in this area?
In the Charlotte area, the best place to do the eclipse is to get to an open spot. If you can get to an area where there aren't any trees, where you can get to a lake, a park, rooftops in uptown Charlotte should be great. Crowder's Mountain would be amazing, but I'm sure it's going to be packed over there. Whitewater Center should be a great location. And any area lake, I think, is going to be great, because if you remove the trees, it gives you more view of the sky and less chance it's going to be obscured by a tree or a building. That's why I think some of the folks, even on Lake Murray, getting out on the boat, will have some of the best views around. They can actually move a little bit, too. If they have a cloud nearby, they can go to a little clearer spot.
I guess if you know where the sun is in your neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 2:30 in the afternoon, you can pretty much predict how much of it you'll be able to see if the sky is clear, correct?
Absolutely. And for the most part, it's not completely straight up, but it's going to be pretty high in the sky. Yeah. So think about at your house where the highest point of the sun is during the day. It's almost near solar noon, which puts it way up there, you know, about 60 degrees above the horizon. I was checking. The first thing I checked when I got down here is exactly where the sun would be at totality. And it's going to be pretty much straight up, which is great for viewing because that usually means you'll have less clouds to worry about. You won't be looking through the horizon, but hard to photograph because you're going to have to aim your camera pretty much straight up.
Yeah. Brad Panovich, stand by. I want to come back to you in just a moment when we have to take a break, and we'll come back with more. Brad Panovich, chief meteorologist at WCNC-TV. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Doctors Making House Calls. Physician-owned and managed, Doctors Making House Calls works to help complex patients stay healthy at home and avoid unnecessary ER visits and hospitalizations. Details available at doctorsmakinghousecalls.com. And Barnstock Music Festival, using music to support local nonprofits and charities dedicated to protecting the environment, educating children, and feeding the hungry. Founded in 2009, more at mybarnstock.com. The events in Charlottesville and the subsequent removal of Confederate monuments legally and illegally has renewed a conversation about these symbols that many thought ended with the Confederate flag coming down at the State House in Columbia, among other places. Clearly, the jury is still out on what should happen to these relics. We look more deeply into the intended meaning behind them and if their removal would mean the erasure of history. Tomorrow on this program at 9.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, what makes a great boss? One Silicon Valley boss says she did it all wrong. She's found a better way. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Stay tuned for On Point from 10 till noon following Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins on the day of the Great American Solar Eclipse. WCNC-TV Chief Meteorologist Brad Panovich is joining us via Skype from Lake Murray in Columbia, South Carolina, which is billing itself as, what did I call it, the total eclipse capital of the East Coast. Not hyperbole. I guess a lot of people have come in there. You're at Lake Murray. And I read the other day, they have public beaches around Lake Murray, around the Lake Murray Dam. And South Carolina officials assured people that despite rumors to the contrary, the Lake Murray Dam would be open. They're not going to open the floodgates, but they're going to open the beaches so that the eclipse watchers can come see it. What kind of setup do they have there?
Well, I was actually over by the dam earlier yesterday and over by Dreyer State Park, two big public areas on the lake. And both of them are holding huge eclipse viewing parties. And they've sold tickets really cheap, you know, just to get in there to kind of control the numbers. But one thing I did notice, Mike, is going over there, there's tons of little islands on Lake Murray. There's quite a few of them. And there are people camped out on those islands. They take their boat out there, put a tent up, and they are really getting any real estate they can that has beachfront on an island so they can see the eclipse. The dam's been packed full of people, and the state park, I think they sold out. They got food trucks over there. They've got tents. They're selling T-shirts. It really is an amazing event. It's almost kind of like a music festival as people have come to the lake and kind of camped out and prepared for this. I'm really waiting to see how many boats are going to be anchored out in a lot of these coves and in the middle. Some people have been estimating that, you know, there could be tens of thousands of boats at one time on the lake. So many so you might be able to walk across the lake in some sections across the boats. There'd be that many out there.
Unbelievable. When did you get to Columbia?
I actually left late Saturday night because two reasons. One, I didn't want to worry about traffic at all. And two, I wanted to enjoy some of the weekend down here before the eclipse started. But yeah, we got here. We stocked up on food. We kind of treated this like a hurricane. We came prepared to be here and not really go anywhere for a day or two.
So as you drove through at least part of Columbia to get there, what was the traffic light? Are you seeing tons of people do you know that this is not a normal weekend in Columbia?
Yeah, I would say that it kind of felt like a holiday weekend, like people were traveling out of town for maybe Thanksgiving or Christmas. I mean, the traffic was moving, but you did notice there were a few more cars on the road than you typically would see on an August weekend. And I also noticed quite a bit of out-of-state plates, like even as we drove through the little town of Chapin, which is here on Lake Murray. I noticed plates from New York, Ohio, Virginia, areas that, you know, you don't normally would see in Chapin, South Carolina. Right. So there clearly had been people, and they were at the restaurants in the town. So there were clearly people that had come in ahead of time. And my friends who live on the lake here said, you know, pretty much any house that was for sale has been rented out. And almost every property because one of their friends is a realtor, said any house that was for sale, they worked with the owners. And if it wasn't occupied, they rented it out for this weekend. So a lot of folks came down here to be on the lake for this.
So is traffic horrible?
Not at all, to be honest with you. It hasn't been bad at all. I was a little shocked how smooth sailing it was getting around here.
So we're not going to have a total eclipse here. So if people are listening, and you know it's 9:25 in the morning right now, so if they hopped in their car and took the 90-mile drive to Columbia, would there be a place for them to park, get out of the car, watch the eclipse, get back in the car, and come home by 10 o'clock tonight?
I think getting down would be okay because I think it's been spaced out. I really worry about getting back. I'll tell you, as coming down, I got off near Winnsboro on Highway 200. The closest spot to Charlotte that will give you total eclipse is only 44 miles south on I-77. If you get off at exit 48, that's the Winnsboro exit. Now, granted, you're at the very edge of totality there. You only get 10 seconds of totality. But that is the closest spot, and it is just 44 miles down Interstate 77.
Yes.
But that is a small exit. There's like one Exxon station there and I think a Wendy's. So if that exit gets overwhelmed, that's where you run into problems, where you get a large group of people on one exit on a rural road.
It's fascinating to me that astronomers, I'm not sure who does this, physicists, astronomers, somebody has calculated this down to the second. You just mentioned that you're only going to get 10 seconds of total eclipse at exit 44 on I-77, whereas other places it's 2.5 or 2:40, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Somebody has really taken a lot of time to calculate all of this, and I'm curious as to how you would describe the difference between what you will experience in Columbia with total eclipse and what we're going to get here with our near 98% coverage.
I'm glad you're asking that, Mike, because I probably got that question more than any question in the last month or so. And while 98%, we will notice it in Charlotte. You're going to notice the sky dim. It will feel like sunrise or sunset. But the difference between having 2% of the sun showing and zero is huge. It's literally the difference between night and day. Down
that
here
is not
in
what
Columbia,
we want to hear up here.
But it's still going to be cool. Just imagine like sunrise where 2% of the sun is above the horizon, like it was this morning, or at sunset when 2% of the sun is left above the horizon. You got that twilight kind of feel. It's still bright enough. You're not going to need headlights. You're not going to need lights on. But you'll notice in the middle of the day, it'll feel weird because it normally would feel like sunrise or sunset and the temperature will drop. But here, I'm actually excited because we will be able to see stars in the sky. We will see pretty much a nighttime sky that would have a full moon. Mm-hmm. And we will see a nice ring around the moon, the corona, the sun showing around it. And we'll see the horizon kind of lit up a little bit, because if we looked off far enough in the distance, if we're on a mountain, we would see the edge of the shadow where the light is actually coming out. Just a mere 35 miles away.
And unlike a sunrise or a sunset, driving during this should not be a problem because the sun will not be in your eyes. It'll be high in the sky, right?
Exactly. Actually, the only thing you have to worry about during totality is people distracted by the whole thing. Distracted driving is probably the biggest dilemma that we'll run into, because people will, you know, rubbernecking happens with accidents. Rubbernecking occurs on 77 over Lake Norman because people just want to look at the water. Imagine what happens when the sky dims for 2 minutes. People are going to be distracted.
Scientists, as I said earlier in the program, are positively giddy about this event, especially astronomers and physicists and apparently meteorologists. So you're a scientist.
Yeah.
What is it about this event that has you excited?
Couple things. Once, it's just the rarity of it that makes it exciting, to have total nighttime in the middle of the day. But the other thing is, if you understand the geometry of the Earth, the sun, and the moon, and the odd orbits that they both are, all of those have, you really kind of appreciate the fact that this is so amazing that these three things could come together in the perfect alignment for this to occur. Because remember, the sun is 400 times bigger than the moon. So the only way the moon can block out the sun completely is for it to be the right distance, that forced perspective, that makes it 400 times closer to us to block out the sun. So it's really amazing that we get this kind of alignment. And as you mentioned, I think it's amazing that we can calculate all this stuff to the millisecond in some locations. It really shows a lot about how far science has come.
Well, if you're amazed, I'm more amazed. So there you go. Brad Panovich is chief meteorologist for WCNC-TV. He'll be broadcasting throughout the day with special reports on that channel. And I think you're going, a two-hour special at 1 o'clock this afternoon? Is that what you're doing?
Yep. We'll be on from 1 to 3. So hopefully I'll be able to show you totality live here from Lake Murray if you can't see it where you're at.
Okay. Thanks, Brad. I appreciate your time.
Anytime, Mike.
Bye-bye. He joined us by Skype. We want to go back to Winnsboro, South Carolina, very quickly here for just a moment or two, because our correspondent down there, Alex Olgan, has found somebody from out of town. She's from out of town, too. But this guy's really from out of town. Mike Willoughby is from Lancaster County in Pennsylvania. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
So you drove down just for this event?
Yes, we did. We drove down, left early yesterday morning.
How did you choose Winnsboro of all the places along the flight path of this solar eclipse?
Well, I looked at a map and just tried to find the shortest distance that we would need to drive to get in the area of the total eclipse. And I wanted to stay away from the I-95 corridor.
Right.
Uh, for because of the traffic, and I wanted to stay away from a big city like Columbia. So Winnsboro kind of popped out, and I went to their website and their town website and saw they were having an eclipse viewing, and that's what we decided to do.
This is a long drive for a 2.5-minute event. What makes it worthwhile to make that drive? What made it worthwhile for you so far?
Well, I think just being able to see the total eclipse and experience the total darkness is what really makes it special, because we could have viewed it. I think we had about 70% blockage where we lived, and right. So we could have seen it there, but just the total eclipse would be really neat.
Hmm. And the weather looks good. What would you have done if the weather hadn't cooperated today?
Well, you know, I wasn't sure, because about 3 days ago, they were calling for afternoon storms here. And so we thought, well, you know, at a certain point, we're going to have to commit and just go. And so we looked a couple days ago. It didn't look too bad, so we said, we're going.
Have you ever seen one of these before, total eclipse?
No, I haven't.
So this is going to be the people who have seen it say that this is a life-changing event. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I believe it. And you can just feel the excitement around here, too. I mean, people are just sitting here in anticipation waiting for it.
Wow. Well, congratulations for making it down there. I hope you have great weather for it. I hope it is a life-changing experience for the positive for you. And drive carefully on the way back. Don't leave at once. That's what they're afraid of. Everybody's going to leave at once, and there'll be total gridlock everywhere. But thank you for taking time to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mike Willoughby, who's from Lancaster County in Pennsylvania. We're going to talk to an ophthalmologist in a moment about how to safely view this eclipse and what could happen if you're not careful. But first, let's get back in touch with Jack Howard. He is the Solar System Ambassador for NASA and a retired professor of physics and astronomy at Rowan Cabarrus Community College, where he still teaches. He's watching the eclipse today, I believe, from Roper Mountain Science Center in Greenville, South Carolina. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Mike. Down here we've got quite a crowd, and fortunately clear weather so far, so the excitement's building down here too.
Now, why did you choose Roper Mountain Science Center to see this?
Actually, I was down here yesterday. We had planned this some time back. I came down and did a presentation about the history of observing the sun and the science behind it. And a few days ago, we were having conversations, and I was asked if I could come back and do that presentation again today, and couldn't turn that chance down. We have a big event here, extremely well organized, and a lot of people attending, so they wanted another solar system ambassador here, and my wife and I decided Greenville is as good as anything, okay. So we're happy to be back here today as well as yesterday.
Because you were on this program earlier this month, and you were planning, I think at the time, to be at Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute in Rosman in western North Carolina, which is a federal installation that used to track NASA astronauts and spy satellites, and they're using their giant radio telescopes to observe this. What will they be able to do with those that they cannot do when the sun is not covered by the moon?
They will be able to see the corona in radio waves just like we do in visible light. And what makes this very interesting is that radio astronomy is a fairly new branch. It goes back about 50 years. And this is the first time that we know of that the shadow of totality, the path of totality, has actually crossed over an observatory with large radio dishes. So they have those all set to go. They're looking at the corona, and since they're the first, they quite freely admit they don't know what they're going to see.
There are all kinds of scientists and science facilities through the path of this eclipse from Oregon to Charleston that are doing all kinds of experiments. Rather, do you know how many of them do you know of, and of what they're doing? What strikes you as the most interesting?
I know several of them. The one that I think is the most interesting, it's an experiment that's been done before. Arthur Eddington did it back in 1919.
I was just going to ask you about that. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. This is retesting Einstein's theory of relativity. His general theory, published in 1915, predicted that light passing very, very close to the sun, the path of that light would get bent, just like gravity was bending it. And the way we test that is to look at stars in the daytime, you know, when the sun's blocked out, and see if those stars are actually where we know they are, or whether that light has been bent and they appear to be a little bit off to the side. This was tested in 1919, and it was the first experimental test that confirmed the general theory of relativity. But the sensitivity, you know, our ability to measure small changes in position, has gotten better with technology. So a number of locations are testing that again, hoping to refine the results. And down here in Greenville, astronomers from Furman University are doing it a slightly different way. 6 months ago, they took pictures of a star field where the sun is located today. They used the nighttime thing to get good locations on all the stars. And today, during the eclipse, they hope to take the pictures again and see how good it gets. And they're doing it with a digital camera rather than photography. So it's the first time that has been done, and we're really excited to see what comes out of that.
It's fascinating to me that because the globe, the planet Earth, is turning all the time, and it's also moving through space all the time. The fact that you can pinpoint where stars are in the night sky and then come back during an eclipse to see if they've moved. Well, of course they've moved. So how do you know they haven't moved? How do you know they've moved? How do you know? I don't even know how to ask the question.
That's really quite simple. The stars in the, like, think the constellation Orion or the Big Dipper. You know, if you go outside at night, you look up and say, oh, there's the Big Dipper. That's because the relative positions of them don't change. All the stars fit distant patterns on, you know, they appear to be on a celestial sphere. Ancient astronomers actually thought they were. But we know that there are different distances and whatnot, but their relative locations don't change from night to night. Mm. They do change over periods of thousands of years, but, you know, from 6 months ago to right now, two stars that were a tenth of a degree apart are still going to be a tenth of a degree apart. And we don't have to measure exactly where they are. We just have to measure them in comparison to nearby stars. And those stars that appear to be near the edge of the sun are the ones that will appear to have moved relative to other nearby stars.
So do you think, when this is all said and done, that scientists will learn a lot, a little, something new they didn't know before? What do you think the outcome of this will be scientifically?
I think we're going to learn some things that we did not know before, and I expect we will learn a lot. Because this one is observable across the United States. It's accessible to a lot of American astronomers, particularly the radio astronomy experiments at Perry. Like I said, I talked to the administrative director there, Ken Steiner, who's a friend of mine, and he just laughed and said, we don't know what we're going to see, but it's going to be really interesting.
Because the next eclipse to go coast to coast in this country won't occur till August 12th, 2045, and that's taking a different path, is it not?
Yes, it is.
And how often does, I only have 30 seconds, but how often do these total eclipses occur around the globe?
Around the globe, we get about three every 2 years.
And is there the kind of hoopla that is associated with this one on those other eclipses?
Depends on where the location is. Uh-huh. If it's accessible to tourists, yes. It depends on where that narrow path of totality occurs.
Jack Howard is the Solar System Ambassador for NASA. Thanks for joining us again today. I appreciate it. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Baby & Company, a modern birth center offering individualized maternity and well woman care classes and wellness services in an intimate setting. More information available at babyandcompany.com. And Central Piedmont Community College offering Saturday SAT and ACT exam preparation classes starting September 9th at four CPCC locations. Details at collegiatetestprep.com. Well, you know, Mondays can be bad enough on their own. They're even worse when you have a bad boss like Kim Scott. The former Silicon Valley executive has written about how to be an effective boss, and that'll be coming up during the 10 o'clock hour of On Point, her March conversation with Tom Ashbrook. We'll have continuing coverage of the eclipse today later on this afternoon, and we're coming back to talk about what may happen to energy generation during this eclipse and how to protect your vision. Stay with us.
It's easy to look at headlines to get a sense of the news.
9 senators rejected that Senate version of the bill.
Venezuela was paralyzed by strikes and protests.
This missile can actually travel much farther than...
All Things Considered digs into the center of the story to help you really understand not just what's happening, but why. Stand with the facts. Listen every day.
Stay connected at 90.7 WFAE, at WFAE.org, and with our mobile app.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. This eclipse brings practical concerns with it, including how it will impact the ability to generate solar power. Duke Energy calculates solar panels connected to its grid could lose thousands of megawatts of energy in the last hour of the eclipse, enough to power or not power 250,000 homes. So what are they doing to get ready? We asked Duke Energy spokesman Randy Wheelis.
North Carolina is second in the nation for overall solar, and even at 90%, we're going to lose a lot of solar in the middle of the afternoon when it's producing its most. So what we've been doing is making sure we've got power plants in reserve that are going to come on in the afternoon when that solar is dipping down, and just as important, scaling that back when that solar makes a rebound after the eclipse is over.
But doesn't that happen every day as clouds pass over the sun or we get a significant thunderstorm over a solar array? I mean, doesn't it happen all the time?
Yeah, you know, balancing the energy grid does happen every day. I mean, there's weather events all the time. Power plants are coming on and off. What makes this unique is that unlike a thunderstorm where it's very isolated geographically, this is going to cover the state very quickly and all the solar power will be affected. You know, one scenario, we could lose up to 2,000 megawatts, which is about the size of a nuclear plant. So what we need to have is those power plants in reserve that can kick in when that solar's waning. And then when it's starting to kick back, we can pull those plants back. And most people won't notice anything.
As you get further away from the line of total eclipse, there'll be even less of an eclipse for those people in that part of the state, which is where a lot of the arrays are. How much sunlight do you think we'll lose?
So in most of the state, it's around 90%. So even with that, we'll lose a lot of solar power over a short period of time. And it's just a balancing act to make sure, and we know this is coming, we'll have power plants in reserve that will kick in when that solar is starting to decline. Mm-hmm. And then they can quickly take them offline when the solar starts to ramp back up. It's a balancing act we do every day. You don't have an eclipse every day.
Randy Wheelis, the spokesperson for Duke Energy. We're going back to Winnsboro. That's where our reporter Alex Olgan is, but she has corralled Kristen Thompson, physics professor at Davidson College down there. And welcome back to the program, Kristen. I appreciate your time.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So you guys are out there doing experiments. You're setting up telescopes right now.
Yes, we are currently setting up telescopes as we speak, and these telescopes we're going to use throughout the day to watch the partial eclipse as it's coming and watch the partial eclipse as it leaves. And during totality, actually, we're just going to close down the telescopes because we're not doing any real science. We just want people to enjoy totality. We want them to be able to see it, to appreciate it, make it a memorable experience. So we're actually just going to have everybody watching totality as it happens. Rather than taking time to do any real science.
What are you doing to protect yourself during the partial eclipse with a telescope? That's kind of a focusing the energy of the
sun. Absolutely. Yeah, it's certainly a concern. We do want to make sure that we are very careful as we're observing the sun all day long, the partial eclipse and even into the seconds just prior to totality and just after totality. The telescopes that we have here, we have a mixture. We have some telescopes that will give us a projection of the image of the eclipse. So we'll be projecting it onto the ground or onto some sort of a screen. We have some telescopes that have visual solar filters over the end. So you'll see the sun in visual light just like you would if you were wearing those eclipse glasses. It's basically like putting a giant eclipse glass over the end of the telescope. And we have still others that we call dedicated solar telescopes. We only use them to look at the sun. And those telescopes only let through a very particular wavelength of light. And that color that they let through is red. We call these hydrogen alpha telescopes. And these telescopes, the sun will look red. You can see lots of interesting features. And they're totally safe to look at because, well, it's just red light. And we know that the color red doesn't hurt our eyes. So if we have three different methods that we'll be using with our telescopes, to allow people to see the sun in various ways throughout the afternoon.
Kristen Thompson is a physics professor at Davidson College. She's down there with a whole bunch of folks from Davidson College in Winnsboro at a baseball field. Thank you for talking to us. I appreciate it.
Yes, they're lining up already.
Watching this is very important that you protect your vision. You can do permanent damage. Dr. William Branner with Charlotte Ophthalmology Center for Sight has some tips on how to do that, coupled with some warnings that need to be heeded. And in the interest of full disclosure, Dr. Branner is my personal eye doctor, so I'll be giving him more choice than I would a normal guest. I'll be asking several questions and following up by asking him which he likes better, one or two. Okay. So on this day of the eclipse, why is looking directly at the sun so dangerous?
It is absolutely dangerous because of the UV rays that are going to be passing into your eyes as you gaze into the sun. It's harmful to look at the sun anytime. Staring at the sun can definitely cause some damage to your retina that's permanent. But because of the eclipse, we're able to stare at the sun for longer periods. So the more of those UV rays are going to be able to enter into the eye and cause some damage to the retina.
But our retinas, don't our eyes have pain receptors? It's painful to look at the sun. Wouldn't that be a warning that we actually can't ignore? Wouldn't our eyelids shut to protect ourselves?
Yeah, but normally when you're looking at the sun when there's no eclipse, there's so much brightness there, you would definitely not be able to do that for very long because of pain and a reflex. But with the sun being obscured by the moon, we're not going to be able to rely on that reflex. It'll be very easy for us to stare at the sun for a number of minutes without any discomfort at all.
But wouldn't that be just like looking into a sunset as the sun begins to slip over the horizon? That's difficult to drive in. Why wouldn't it be just as difficult to look up at a partially eclipsed sun?
It's still going to be dim enough that you can look at it.
So
I think two people are going to be willing to put up with a little bit of discomfort to see this amazing event, really.
Yeah. So you told me a couple of weeks ago, we just ran into each other, and you told me that you have seen on patients a lot of retinal burns, which is what happens when you look at the sun. You burn your retina. What does that look like to you, an eye doctor, and what does the person who has had the damage experience?
Yeah, there are not many people out there who are sun starers, but there's a group of people who feel like they derive some energy from the sun. So by staring into it, they would benefit from it. And from staring at the sun, damage to their retina occurs by what we call oxidative damage. It's not a thermal injury. It's not heat. It's actually just a chemical reaction that occurs that causes these free radicals to be released, and they cause damage to the receptors in the retina. And that causes a permanent blind spot in the vision. An example of it would be if you've ever looked at a lamp or when you've had a flash photo taken, you have this after image in your vision for a few minutes, but that gradually fades away. If you stare at the sun and have some permanent damage to your retina, it's going to be like that after image, but it's going to be there all the time. It's not going away.
Forever.
So those patients will come in to see me complaining of a blind spot in their vision, and what I'll see is evidence of a injury to the macula, the part of the retina that you see letters with, and there'll be a pale spot in the retina that's visible. But it's not a painful injury to the eye. It's not a burn. It's not something that gives a patient pain, just a blind spot.
So how long does it take for that to happen? If you're out this afternoon looking up, how long does that take for that damage to occur?
Well, I've been telling patients it's okay to glance at the eclipse just like it's okay to glance at the sun on a regular day. But if you're going to look at that into that eclipse for 30 seconds even, it could cause some permanent damage. So it's a time factor, and the amount of exposure is what's important. So 7 minutes is how long the event's going to last, and if you're looking at it for more than 30 seconds. So you can glance at it, but don't watch it unless you have adequate protection.
So let's talk about that adequate protection. You were very clear to me a couple of weeks ago that sunglasses, the kind you wear in the car, the kind you wear at the beach, the kind you wear walking down the street, sunglasses will not protect you. That is correct, correct?
That's correct. There's too much light transmission through a regular sunglass to offer the protection from all those UV rays that are going to be sweeping into your eyes as you stare at the eclipse. So you have to have special protection, special filters, and these glasses that are being sold at different stores across the nation right now are made with a special filter. They have a coating of silver or aluminum on them, and they have a rating stamped on the inside that says it meets the standards for an ISO 12312-2 filter.
Right.
It should say that on the tab.
Now, there have been some unscrupulous vendors who have been printing that on the tab of these glasses when, in fact, the lenses that they're providing you are not what they say they are. How do you know that you have the real thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. The best thing to do is to show your glasses to an optician, because an optician in an optical lab could actually test and tell you. And, you know, most places that sell glasses have an optician that could help decipher that. There's no way that you can tell yourself, though.
Now, back in the day, when we had a previous eclipse, I remember that was back when we had film for cameras. And people were taking several layers of negatives, black and white negatives, and putting them over their eyes to look at that eclipse. Is that safe?
For my patients right now, we've had this question come up so often about some alternatives. I've had a patient ask me if they could just fill up a pan of water and look at the reflection of the sun in a pan of water, which is what their grandparents did years ago.
Right.
I've had patients talk about using pinhole cameras, which are safe to create with a piece of cardboard. I've had some ask me about holding up CDs or different layers of film. I'm a little concerned about the reliability of that. I'm just advising people to get the special glasses with the special filters and try to do it the safest way possible.
Can you do it through your camera phone? Can you aim your phone up to the sun and look at the image on the camera screen? I mean, are you going to see too much of the sun peripherally that you might be causing damage?
Actually, that could create more damage, because if you look through, say, a binocular or a telescope or a camera viewfinder at the eclipse, it's going to focus those light rays more precisely into almost a laser beam. I have a laser at my office that I use to treat various conditions with, and if I turn that laser on and focus it and treat for a tenth of a second, it'll create a permanent burn on the retina just that quickly. So by concentrating those rays of light with a viewfinder or binocular or some other apparatus, you could actually damage your retina more quickly.
So using a reflex...
I'm also told by the camera manufacturers that it can damage the camera.
In the phone, in the light sensors.
Yes.
But even if you're using an ordinary reflex or a camera where the light is filtered through a series of mirrors, that's worse, because that's going to create that laser beam effect that you're talking about.
If it's filtered, if you have the proper filter on your camera, you're okay.
Okay. They say it is safe to look at the sun when the sun is in full eclipse, and it will never be in full eclipse here in Charlotte, only in the path through South Carolina. But if you're in South Carolina, for that 2.5 minutes or so, is it safe to look at the sun when it's in total eclipse?
Yes, it is.
And how do you know? How do you know either when it's in total eclipse or when to look away because it's about to come out?
You can tell by the shape of the shadow of the moon in front of the sun, and once those are lined up so that they are perfectly aligned, it is safe to look at it for that, I would say, minute and a half. But that's a technical explanation,
right.
And I think it would be very hard to time that, and if you're not in the zone of 100% eclipse,
then and you try that, you really are exposing your eyes for that minute and a half to those damaging rays.
And Charlotte will not be in the path of total eclipse. So have you cleared your calendar tomorrow for all these new patients that will be arriving at your door?
Well, you know, that's my big concern, other than trying to let people know to wear the proper protection, is that we're going to have some calls of people who feel like they have an eye symptom related to looking at the eclipse, and I've told my staff to be ready for phone calls and to get people in. There is not really an effective treatment for a retinal damage from the eclipse, but depending on the extent of the damage, we can sometimes reassure the patient based on some testing that this is something that will improve over time, over months, on its own. So it would just take an exam and a special test to be able to tell a patient that.
So you can do serious, permanent damage. This is not a joke. This is not something to take lightly. You should take all the precautions or simply use an old-fashioned box camera where you put a pinhole in a piece of cardboard and look at the pavement below you to see what the eclipse looked like. Do not look at the sun. Dr. William Branner, ophthalmologist with Charlotte Ophthalmology Center for Sight, my personal eye doctor, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for your time, and we'll enjoy the show today.
So what have we learned? Protect your vision. If you're going to look at this eclipse, scientists may actually learn a lot from examining, doing experiments during this eclipse. Getting in to view the eclipse may be easier than getting out, and our area will experience light levels not unlike the start of sunrise or the end of sunset, though the sun will be high in the sky and not on the horizon, so it should not trouble you while you're driving. Just don't look up and get distracted. I guess that's some of what we've learned today. This is such a mega event from Oregon to South Carolina. We felt it needed its own theme song, but we couldn't decide on what the song should be, so we end with a medley of the eclipse's greatest hits.
I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.